This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I'm Buzz Ulrich.
I'm Kip Allen.
And I'm Andy Bates.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest...
Since the start of World War II, the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service has helped more than 500,000 people. I'm Kip Allen, and I'll have more on the LIRS 75 years of service later in the broadcast.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Liberia partnered to train deaconesses for service in Liberia.
I always had kind of a mind for international mission work. Originally, what it was I wanted to go to East Africa and live on basically nothing and have a tent there and just kind of go out and see where we end up.
And now today's Fast Track.
In 2014, as it was in 2013, Pastor Carlos Kraka from Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in the city of Blumenau in Brazil is busy putting his feet on the pedals and bicycle wheels across various parts of that South American country. WLN Digest reported a year ago on Pastor Kraka as he rolled through over 2,600 kilometers through Blumenau, Pomerod, the Cedars River area, Timbo, Indaial, Gaspar, Portobello, and other communities as part of the Hope and Joy and Health Pedaling Project. The pastor says he takes water to the people along that bicycle route and gives them a written reflection that says in part, "Get closer to Jesus Christ. His teachings are alive. They bring forgiveness and peace." He urges residents along his bike path to enjoy this year, 2014, to be closer to Jesus, your Savior, so you will have safety. He offers forgiveness and joy and love and hope. Pastor Carlos Kraka is a member of the IELB, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Brazil, one of the member church bodies in the International Lutheran Council.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. Idu Loka Lutheran Vartha Paripadi Aagunu.
The Second World War was looming in early 1939 when the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service was formed. Its mission grew even more urgent once the fighting stopped in 1945, according to Pastor Bart Day, Executive Director of the Office of National Missions.
They were originally formed as a mechanism to help European Lutherans who were displaced following World War II.
As the chaos of post-war Europe eased, the LIRS examined its mission and decided its help was still needed in other areas.
After a decade or two, that work was done, and then LIRS turned their attention to say, are we finished, or are there other folks that we could be serving, and how would we begin to do that work?
Even though the war was over and the Nazis defeated, other problems remained.
Immigrants, refugees, victims of human trafficking, victims of sex crimes, asylum seekers, children, unaccompanied minors. The list over the years has just grown exponentially for LIRS and the number of folks that they've been able to help.
Although originally formed to help European Lutherans, the service helps all in need, regardless of faith. Day says that since the service's founding, there have been three major shifts in need. The first major shift was in the 1970s in the aftermath of the Vietnam War.
In the early 1970s, LIRS saw rather firsthand the unmet needs of unaccompanied minors that were coming out of Southeast Asia.
Although peace later came to Southeast Asia, the African nation of Sudan slipped into anarchy and civil war. Day says the LIRS was especially involved with the plight of Sudanese children.
In the mid-1980s, there was another shift. People still hear or remember about the lost boys and the girls that came out of Sudan. And LIRS played a major part in expediting their resettlement after those children oftentimes languished for many, many years in camps before they could come to the United States.
The third shift, according to Day, occurred in the 1990s.
And then in the mid-90s, there was yet another historic shift for LIRS where they began to really address issues of justice that concerned asylum seekers and other people who had been more directly impacted through detention.
Day says the number of refugee seekers currently held in detention camps or county jails in the United States exceeds 100,000. They're held until a judge can determine their legal status, a process that can take years. The LIRS is seeking alternatives to detention while these cases are being resolved.
And LIRS actually started what is now known as the Detention Watch Program. That is its own incorporated entity. Also, the Detained and Torture Survivor Legal Support Network, which just celebrated 10 years in 2012, really working to try to find helpful and healthy alternatives to detention.
Day says the LIRS encourages local congregations' involvement in such things as visitation with those immigrants currently in detention.
One of the great programs that LIRS has that we've actually been trying to encourage with LCMS congregations, we're going to again offer some special funding to LCMS districts and congregations as part of the 75th anniversary, is to encourage congregations to go and make visitation on folks who are in immigration detention.
LIRS networks with many Lutheran service organizations and congregations to provide needed services.
A lot of the things you're talking about, offering legal, welcoming them into community, teaching them ESL, teaching them job skills, we're using within the LCMS recognized service organizations and others that partner with LIRS as these services are provided.
The LIRS also works directly with the federal government on resettlement efforts, one of the few organizations to do so.
The Roman Catholic Church and LIRS, those two entities make up a huge percentage amount of organizations that are legally able to be on the front end of resettlement.
As the 21st century unfolds, new challenges arise. Day says one growing problem is the number of children who cross the border alone. He says this was not a serious problem just a few years ago.
If you go back just 5 or 6, 7 years ago, and you were to look at the number of undocumented, unaccompanied minor children coming across the border from Central America, fleeing from drugs and the cartel and the crime, the numbers were minuscule.
Today, the problem is of frightening proportions.
This year, the U.S. government is expecting, and these are the numbers of unaccompanied minor children that they will actually pick up at the border, is going to exceed 70,000.
Those 70,000 are just those who will be apprehended at the border. How many died while walking from Central America or actually make it into the United States is unknown. However, that number may well be many times 70,000. Even more tragically, many who do succeed in making it to the U.S. find themselves in the underground economy, virtual slaves to human traffickers.
But that is, in fact, happening, and it is a huge issue. The church has at least initially addressed that. We've shared resources in conjunction, were developed with LIRS, and they've been shared with LCMS congregations. But it's going to take another large effort to really end that whole piece of human trafficking that is also a part of where a number of these children are showing up.
Many wind up in the sex trade. Others are held in sweatshops, are forced to work in fields, or are bound as domestic help, slaves in everything but name. While the challenges are enormous, so are the opportunities. Day says the LIRS believes local congregations have a major role to play in helping these children.
It is going to demand more and more time and attention and resources, but it is a huge opportunity for congregations, particularly in foster care and adoption. And that is, again, another program that we are talking with LIRS right now as a part of the celebration of the 75th. Should we direct some real dollars and resources to make a stronger connection with LCMS congregations, specifically to identify families who can work in foster care and adoption for these children who are coming?
Additionally, the service works as an advocate on Capitol Hill for immigration reform. It's especially concerned that immigration laws take family into account.
But there are still really important changes that can be made and things that can be safeguarded, like safeguarding family within those things, that the core family and keeping families together, reunited families, not having a spouse or a child who is languishing for decades back in their country when the rest of their family is legally in the United States.
Day says aggressive outreach efforts to these new immigrant groups will be helpful to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
My Office of National Mission is looking at the landscape of North America. And if the LCMS is going to continue not to just survive, but actually thrive in the coming decades, we are going to become a far more ethnically diverse church body than we are today.
To learn more about the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service, go to lirs.org. Kip Allen, World Lutheran News Digest.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. The work by the Hewilongasi Lutheran Fahawa.
In mid-November 2013, the Director of Deaconess Ministry for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Deaconess Grace Rao, and Deaconess Sandra Rain traveled to Liberia to train students for 2 weeks as they continue their preparation for service as deaconesses in the church and in the community. Deaconess Rao explains how the program began in 2012 at the invitation of the President of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Liberia.
The LCMS and Evangelical Lutheran Church of Liberia, the bishop, the president, Amos Bole, invited us to come over there, and thank you for his invitation. So the first presentation was to give them the understanding the role of women in the church based on the CDCR document. We were there only for 1 week, but the presentations were spread out in two different cities. One was the capital, the Monrovia. We stayed there for 3 days, talked about the role of women in the church, and then we moved to Banga, which is about 5 hours' drive from Monrovia, and the women over here. So we had quite a bit audience, about 70 to 80 in Monrovia, and about 35 to 40 in Banga.
Student Helen describes what she and her fellow Liberian deaconess students are studying.
But we want to be grateful to deaconess. We are learning so many things. We learn about the small catechism, which is baptism, the Ten Commandments, the sacrament, and so many lots. We learn who is a deaconess and what a deaconess can do and what they can do.
Student Anna says they study Luther's small catechism as part of their preparation for their service as deaconesses.
The catechism, we use the catechism along with the Bible to explain the doctrine of the church to the women, and sometimes in Sunday school. The little children Sunday school teaching with them.
Deaconess Grace Rao will return to Liberia on February 22nd to teach for 10 days along with Deaconess Cheryl Naumann. They'll teach on Lutheranism 101 and the history of deaconesses to the small cohort. Deaconess Rao describes the ideal class size for this program.
Since this is a program, we have accepted a program, we had 10 students. I would like to have a 10 students because we fund the program. LCMS funds the program, everything. So it's nice to have a small group so we can have face-to-face interaction.
Deaconesses can serve in a variety of ways to support the office of holy ministry, the work of the church, and bring the mercy of Christ to their communities. Deaconess Rao explains her anticipation for these future deaconesses.
I think most of them will be parish deaconesses, serving, teaching the Sunday school, youth programs. Some would like to do counseling for women and children. And one of the ladies is a nurse. She's a registered nurse. She has her undergraduation in nursing. So she's smart as well, and she would be an idol to be a parish nurse in additional to her secular vocation. Yes. One of them was also a teacher. Two, actually, yes. And she's a government public school teacher, what we say it in the United States. Yeah. And there are various ways. Some of them are musicians. They're already choir directors, so they would like to develop their music skills and apply to the theology. As Luther says, you know, music is one of the best ways to get the devil away from here.
Student Helen expresses how she hopes to serve as a deaconess.
After my completion of this study, it's not only in the church. I need to serve the community and serve the needy. Those are in need. Often, and other people go to the prison compound and do any other services that I'm able to run off to the community, not only in the church.
Deaconess Sandra Rain describes the students she taught during their visit in November of 2013.
These women have such a passion to learn. They want to serve their Lord. And so any support that people can give to international missions is greatly appreciated, and we thank God for that support.
Deaconess Rain plans to continue teaching Deaconess students around the world.
I've taught in Tanzania, and we'll be going back there in March to teach again.
Deaconess training organized by Deaconess Grace Rao will also continue in other countries, including South Africa, Latvia, the Philippines, Malaysia, and Indonesia. I'm Andy Bates with World Lutheran News Digest.
Usted está escuchando el resumen de noticias Mundo Luterano. This is World Lutheran News Digest.
WLN Digest has profiled Reverend Joshua Gale at least twice and has interviewed him at least one other time since the end of 2012. Gale has been working in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in the United States at Philly Ministries, an urban inner-city mission that has been helping residents of that major metropolitan area learn about Christ and what it means to have a Lutheran worldview. But Joshua Gale always had his eyes open for a new adventure, perhaps to East Africa or somewhere similar. While recently continuing his work in national missions for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Pastor Gale received a call a few months ago that would potentially lead to moving his family a continent away from the United States.
And what exactly happened when you got that call?
Well, we had a lot to think about because there was a lot that we had started in Philadelphia. There was a lot that we wanted to see through. The new members of the congregation came from outside of Christianity, let alone from outside of Lutheranism. So it was something that we wanted to see. There's a lot of good projects that we saw off the ground that we wanted to continue to work with. So when I received the call to Peru, I mean, the question is what we carry on then to Peru, who comes in behind me in Philadelphia. And so those were all important questions to ask. It was a hard time of deliberation.
The country of Peru is not exactly top of mind for most people in the United States.
It's not. It's kind of amazing how it's not, because I knew very little about the country, and I always thought myself as somewhat savvy in world news. There's not a lot of English resources for Peru, and there's a long history there. There's many things that are fascinating in the region. I mean, Lima is the city of kings. It was the seat of the viceroyalty for Spain. It's a 500-year-old city. And there's fascinating history there that it's really not on our radar much. Americans know about Brazil, you know, Buenos Aires and Argentina to some extent, but not so much Peru. Usually we know for Machu Picchu and vacations, but it's a wonderful country on its own. Lima is an amazing city, and they have fantastic history that somehow doesn't end up translated into our culture.
Reverend Gale and his family will have a set of new experiences.
We're just going straight there. We haven't been to Lima, Peru. We haven't been to South America at all. And nowhere on the continent. So it was just knowing what the work was there, what was to be done, that interested us. And the first time we see it is when we arrive with our suitcases and unpack at our new house.
It will be a new perspective on living, which has led to questions from family and friends of Joshua and Amanda Gale.
The dynamic with family was a little more difficult. We would actually see family more. In the current process the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has for its international missionaries, we would be back more than when I was a national missionary in Philadelphia. I don't know if we've completely convinced our parents, my wife and I, our parents of that yet, but we would. We would be around them more when we continue to touch base with our supporters that are near where they are. So that's taken a little bit of time. Our friends, you know, are concerned. Peru has a relatively recent difficult past. There still exists a terrorist organization there that is much smaller than it used to be. But that's something that people know, and so they have a concern. But Lima, Peru is statistically safer than where I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So it's kind of the perception of the city that is difficult to sometimes overcome with family and friends. Distance plays into it. It's not as far as it may seem. It's for the most, usually on Central Time Zone, and so it's directly south of us. It doesn't take too long. There's some direct flights to there, so it's not extremely far away.
Given that Pastor Joshua Gale has already done national mission work for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, it's not going to be a difficult process in preparing for the move. It'll be more dramatic once they are residents in the city of Lima, Peru.
The culture there is a mix of culture. They've had Japanese presidents in the past, as recent as the year 2000. during that difficult time with the terrorist group that's there in Peru. So in kind of an Americanized Chinese food is a national cuisine of Peru. So it's a melting pot of cultures. It's a very diverse area. Even the language itself is somewhat unique. The version of Spanish that's there, it's more European or Castilian related too. So it's an amazing culture. There's everything that you could want will be there. I mean, it's a city of about 9 million people.
Hold that statistic in your mind for a moment. Confessional Lutherans are a tiny fraction of a percentage of the population in the vast city of Lima, let alone the whole country of Peru, which is traditionally a Roman Catholic nation.
So it's a huge place, and then the footprint that it actually occupies is a few times larger than New York City itself. So it's spread out, a lot of different neighborhoods, varying degrees of culture that are there. But it'll be an amazing place. And out of that huge area, we only have a few of our churches. I'll begin work with Castillo Fuerte. It's a mercy house in La Victoria, which is a neighborhood of Lima, Peru. It gives us an opportunity to care for some human needs around our altars and pulpits. So the church is there distributing the forgiveness of sins, right? Preaching the gospel, ministering the sacraments. We're catechizing people there each day. And around that, we can care for some human needs. Issues of hunger and employment, right? Not as the central thing that we do, but around the distributing of forgiveness, right? And the preaching of the gospel. And then out from there, we'll continue to plant our churches. And we'll go into different neighborhoods. We'll see really what the city gives us. It's hard to be here in St. Louis and think about what we're going to do in Lima. You have to get to Lima first. You learn the culture, you learn the neighborhoods, and then decide from there. So it takes a little bit of time. You have to do your footwork in a city. And you can't just plan on what to do and then get there and try to execute a plan that's kind of in a vacuum.
The LCMS has had some field workers in Lima, Peru for the past several years. In addition to Joshua Gale, there is another called an ordained pastor, a DCO, and some deaconesses at Castillo Fuerte.
Yeah, the genesis of Castillo Fuerte, the Mercy House there, began a few years ago. That was the start of their work. And the planting of that congregation, and also the beginning, we're beginning to establish the Lutheran Church of Peru in that area. So there's quite a bit of groundwork that's been laid in the last couple of years that I'm coming into then a few years after.
So there is a solid plan for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in Peru. The city of Lima is crowded, bustling, and spread out over a large area, which admittedly might be a little challenging for Joshua Gale.
I want to try to rely mostly on public transportation, which is what I do now. I enjoy it. I actually like buses and trains. I think they're fun. And so we'll try to do most of that, but it is a huge city. And so to move around, you kind of need to drive. But if you think of the city that's grown just exponentially in the last just few decades, it's rapidly urbanizing. And the number of cars is many times larger than, say, in the early 80s. And it just it's just snarled traffic there. It's really difficult. So trying to make a combination of the two in order to get around the city.
Reverend Gale says the role he will have in Lima, Peru is one with which he identifies easily, called pastor.
Chiefly what we do is preach the gospel and administer the sacraments. That is, it is what the church does. It's who we are at heart. It's what my task is in this world. But also that gives us other opportunities for other things as well to surround that. Right? We ourselves have been forgiven. Right? We forgive others. We've been loved. So we love those around us. And that does take on a very physical reality. It does give us times when we encounter hunger, and we ourselves have been fed by our Lord. So maybe we didn't go hungry ourselves, but we were fed by our Lord himself. He gave us a home when we did not have one, clothed us when we were naked. In some cases, that's physical lack of houses. But for all people, it's a lack of a home. So that was what we have been given by our Lord. So it does then translate out into a life of mercy in the neighborhoods around us.
But a mission family has to have a starting point. Lately, that has been learning what it will take to live in Peru. Joshua Gale's family has been with him during training.
The main thing that we're starting now in the schedule is the learning of the language. So I don't have a Spanish ability. So I don't know the language. So we're spending the next couple months while we're still here in the States and still getting the word out about our work in Peru to start to have some level of language training. And then the first 4 months that we're in Lima will be total immersion. So that is what we are learning, is the language and the culture. That is our task for the first few months. Then after that, we'll start working with the church once we're capable of preaching and teaching. Because like we said, that's what we do. And you need the native language to do that. And then while we're there, we'll probably live close to the language school, but we also have to figure out where our kids are going to school and how that works. Like we said, it's a big city. So that is a big task, finding out the best location for it. So we'll have somewhere temporary at first, close to the language school, learn the city, and then be able to put stronger roots down.
Pastor Joshua Gale says there is room for other Lutherans who want to travel and become an international missionary.
Going into Peru is going to be just like going into anywhere, St. Louis, Missouri, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, somewhere in Siberia, anywhere on the globe, that the center of what we do is at our altars and pulpits. It is who we are. It's what we do. It is what we are here offering this world, and that's Jesus Christ himself. So while we might be known for some other things, while we do care some for physical needs, while we do care for the poor, the center of what we do is in our altars and pulpits. That's what we're there to do. It's the greatest thing that we can give to these neighborhoods, to these cities, and that's what we're being sent out to do.
If you'd like to support Pastor Gale's spreading the gospel in Peru or anywhere he is working in the missionary fields of the Triune God, you can visit his webpage at www.lcms.org/Gale.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.